So Kathy said something really, really interesting a while ago, and she's going to kill me that she's not here for this. Being a dad, how's that affected your music?
Firstly, thank you for having me. Been on Chai FM many times over the course of my career, but the first time in the new studios, which is cool, right?
Yeah, I haven't even seen the old one, so you're ahead of the game, as far as I'm concerned.
You were never there?
Never. I'm about 6 weeks old.
On behalf of the old guard, welcome.
The old guard, yeah. Well, I'm part of the old guard then, I guess.
Yeah, you are.
But how's it affected my music? You know, the truth is it probably hasn't because, you know, the content of my music really isn't about my kids, but the inspiration to create and I guess to do good work and to continue improving as a human being is directly inspired by my children. So do I sing songs about my kids? Probably not. But are they the inspiration behind creating and doing everything that I do? Most definitely.
So you haven't been influenced by a few beats of Baby Shark?
By Baby Shark, no, but I have listened to Baby Shark way too many damn times. I would hear a flipping song one more time, actually. It's
coming up next.
Parents can... So I've got two kids. I thought I was over Baby Shark by the time my eldest got to about four, and now my youngest one has started the whole problem again. So Baby Shark is on repeat, yeah.
You know, it was really funny because I was singing. I don't know why it was so embarrassing, but I had Frozen in my head the other day.
Yeah.
And I don't have kids, but I happened to be at work, and I was singing it, like, pretty loudly.
Really?
Embarrassingly. Yeah, very embarrassing. And
you're a brave man.
Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Really?
Oh, my goodness me. You had to see the reaction of all the parents. Not again.
But you know, that's what makes these songs great. And, you know, it's like these earworms, you know, that you just can't get out of your damn ear.
Can I introduce you to one?
Sure.
Do you know about Schnappi?
Schnappi.
Schnappi, das kleine Krokodil.
It sounds very German, that, to me. Das kleine Krokodil.
Yeah.
Could be Swiss, too.
Maybe.
Swiss German.
Where do you find these things, Kathy?
Like, I don't really think maybe I want to hear this.
I think you definitely do.
Definitely
do.
Is it worse than the fox going bling bling? Or?
No, this is something that your children will love, Danny. How cute is this? Come on.
So, my father-in-law is German, his family is German, and he sings these kind of songs to my kids. There's a song called Pupschen that he sings. No. Yes, Pupschen. Wir nicht mehr morgen starr. Bis zum Handzug. I don't even speak German, but I don't know. Mein süßes Pupschen.
There's a whole new market there for you, Danny.
No, no, please. But this is, yeah.
Schnappi.
Schnappi.
I love that term, earworm.
This could be a good drinking game. Whenever you say schnappi, you have a schnapps. That kind of would ease the pain of listening to schnappi.
Yeah, schnappi does kind of crocodile. Oh, that's a good one. So, how have you been? You look incredible.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
No, it's not. I'm not kind. Anybody will tell you that.
I appreciate that.
So, how's it been? You've changed. You've really changed a lot.
Have I?
Yeah, since we last spoke. You got married.
Oh, yeah. In that respect. Two kids. Yes, my God.
You've grown up, Danny Kaye.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know how much you need to grow up until you have children. That's the truth, you know, or how selfish you were until you have a wife and children. My life was very selfish and very self-centered. And then you get a wife and kids, and you are the least priority and focus in the world, you know.
It's okay, you are priority.
Oh, thank you. That's why this is very good for my ego, you know, when I go on interviews and, you know, people make a fuss, because at home I'm like, I'm just me, you know.
So what are you doing when you don't make music? When you aren't putting out your own stuff, what are you doing?
So music has actually become a very small part of my life. Over the past, I think 3 years, I haven't really put out music in a while. I've been very focused on, you know, being a good Jewish boy and building businesses and making money.
Okay, that's
no, because you know, I've done six.
But your priorities have changed.
I've done six albums. You know, I was lucky to really achieve most of my goals in music, especially in South Africa. So I always wanted to win awards. I wanted to have number one songs. I wanted to tour on big stages. And, you know, thank God I achieved that. And then I got to a point where I started feeling kind of uninspired by doing this again and again and again, which most creative people tell you that happens to them, you know. If you're a painter, you know, you go through these periods of like just being uninspired. So I got involved in a few businesses, which are very boring and I won't, you know, bore you with, which I really have been setting up over the past 4 years. I got really focused on my NGO with my dad at Shout SA, and we started building a lot of libraries.
Which has just been incredible. Yes, your library project in Alex with these big containers.
Yeah, well they actually, so we've got 11 libraries now all across the country, from Alex to Kuruman just outside Kimberley to Mitchell's Plain. And you know, we took the old very boring container library looking things and we turned them into these really inspirational buildings. So we had top architects redesign the concept of a container library, because our philosophy was, if we teach kids in these very stale, very dull, dreary spaces, they won't be inspired to learn or dream about lives other than, you know, what is in front of them. So we really put a lot of effort into these structures. And yeah, I mean, that's been a big focus for me. And obviously, you know, my kids and marriage have been, I'm very lucky that I get to spend a lot of time with my kids. I don't work, you know, traditional 8 to 5. So, yeah, maybe, you know, that's kind of preoccupied, I guess, the past 3 years, but still the itch to create music is always there, which is, I guess, why I'm really here, because whenever I get new music out, I kind of get on the promotional train and you got to go speak to people. And
yeah, Brown Eyes.
I'm still here. You know? I haven't died, yeah.
Brown Eyes, I think, was played for the first time on Chai FM, wasn't it?
I mean, it, you know, it could have been, you know, you guys have got to support your own way, you know, support a Jewish boy from King
David.
Yeah,
that's a low shot, Danny. That's a low shot. Okay, so you've put out a song that's called Things We Do. Where does it come from? What inspired it?
So, I mean, okay, I guess, what is Things We Do about? So, you only need to open Instagram, Sash, you'll agree with me. You know, you only need to open Instagram to see how kind of material the world has become. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but in all respects, but this song was a commentary, I guess, on how we use material in the pursuit of attraction and making people like us and, you know, making people do things for us. And I think, you know, material possessions are the ultimate kind of bait in winning someone's affection over. I mean, you only need to take a look at the
Rich Kids of Dubai series.
All the corruption commissions going on in our country to know the allure of money and nice things and what it does to people. So Things We Do is the things we do for love and affirmation and affection. And like I say, I'm not really trying to be a paragon of virtue and say I don't do it, or we don't do it, or we don't enjoy these things, or there's a problem with spending and buying your significant other nice things. But it's really just a commentary on it, and it's set to this amazing, you know, piece of music that I think is just great for summer and is really getting a great response.
We're going to play out with a song, but how are you going to instill those kind of values in your children, that money's not everything, and it's more about who you are than what you have?
I think, you know, with my kids, I just try to lead by example. You know, I think being a parent that lectures and kind of tries to, you know, preach to your kids is a very futile exercise. So for me, it's just about them watching. You know, kids watch, they listen, and they learn. And you don't have to do much in terms of the preaching. If they just grow up in homes that they seeing the right things, they seeing their dad or mom do the right things, how they treat one another, you know, the shalom bias in a home, as, you know, our religion preaches, which is something that I think is just the most wonderful philosophy, because I just think that peace in the home just breeds great kids.
Not only that, it gives you a safe place to land so that you can kind of re-energize yourself and go out and fight your battles in the real world.
Yeah.
So that you're not fighting, you know, on all fronts, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we all, you know, the world out there is very stressful. South Africa is a very stressful place to live, you know. Financially, it's stressful. Like, you know, you got to come home to home base that's, as you say, has that silence and that, you know, that cotton wool that makes you feel good. So, yeah, you know, my family does that for me. I think especially being known and the pressures of all of that when I had my, you know, kids and when I met Lisa, it really just put all that noise out. You know, I never really knew that silence until my family. Because I lived, you know, you live in a very noisy world. It's just, it really is.
Incredible.
Kathy, yours meant yours, looking at me with two eyes, yours. Really? Your day.
He is giving me such a hard time.
This is what we do. We
banter. No shalom bias.
We banter. No. That would be very boring radio. Very boring.
Danny, one of our listeners sending through a message that's specifically for you. Says, Baby Shark has educational alternatives. Swimming and brushing teeth.
Oh, my God. That's like the silver lining. And, you know, that's like, look, that's the glasses off.
The silver lining is the song will eventually end. While I was going to it on YouTube, do you know there's a one-hour version?
Really, it's just a loop for
just
an hour.
The loop.
Yeah, I can believe it because it's, yeah, I mean, it's the funny thing is it is very catchy, you know, it is.
All right. What music do you listen to?
I've got a very schizophrenic music profile. So I was actually on a radio show the other day and someone said, you know, open your Apple Music and tell me, you know, what you're listening to. And it was like everything from Frank Sinatra's greatest hits, which I love, to like the most hardcore gangster hip hop album on the total opposite end of the spectrum to Michael Jackson's Bad album, which and Dangerous, which were like the soundtrack of my childhood, which I still absolutely adore, to Stevie Wonder.
Very eclectic.
Yeah, to, you know, like...
Any Rammstein
like
in there?
No Rammstein.
No Rammstein, sorry. Okay. So
to like some great South African music, like this guy Sanel, musician, who's, you know, just been like a big breakout star this year. So I try and keep myself really up to date with, you know, what's happening currently. But then really the music that I love, which I think most of us land up loving, is probably the music we grew up listening to and stuff that happened at very significant moments in our life that is always like in our minds and souls, like a connection. You know, you just, there's those moments of music, I'm sure, when, you know, you were a teenager or whatever, that when they come on, it's just, it's home. It just feels good. So for me, it was like, you know, Michael, Stevie, Prince, that sort of
but
stuff.
But do you realize that you did that for many, many South Africans, right? When your brother died and you did that song for him, Danny, I still remember the music video with the koi fish and and the water cascading down. And I think that you helped a lot of people tap into their own sadness based on your sadness.
Absolutely. I think, you know, great songs can do that. And I think the beauty of being a creative and getting a gift to be able to write is to actually pay that back into the universe.
But you acknowledge that you hold that role for so many South Africans, you know, that have grown up with your music.
It happens to me sometimes. I think as I'm, you know, getting older and, you know, I meet people and they tell me, you know, when my whatever passed away at their memorial, we played I Can't Imagine, and or, you know, when this died, I read your story, I lost my son, it really meant so much to me. I think you realize the power of that. And similarly, on the flip side, you know, there's the dark side of that and putting stuff into the universe that can really have the opposite effect. So the lesson for me, which I've always tried to, you know, embody as someone who has a voice like you guys, you know, on radio, is there are people listening, you know. There are people listening and they are taking to heart more than you realize, as you've just said, you know, what you're putting out there. And that's why when our and I don't want to get too political, but when our politicians or our leaders, spiritual, political, stand up on platforms and send out the wrong stuff, it is just very, very dangerous, you know, because there is just there's these you know, minds out there that are just listening to this messaging, and it's it can be very toxic if it's not, you know, done right.
Yeah, anything with exclusion politics, that's actually the common thread throughout every genocide, whether it was Armenia, whether it was Bosnia, whether it was the Holocaust, whether it was Guatemala, Rwanda, all of these genocides had one common thread, and that is exclusion politics.
Yeah.
You are not part of us.
Yeah.
And
And I think if we, as you say, if we don't learn from that and really work to ensure that that doesn't happen, I mean, you know, that, and that's why with my NGO, we're just trying to get as many people to not have to rely on someone else, you know, to make their life happen for them. You know, I think it's when people are desperate and they're listening to that, you know, person on the podium to solve all their problems, that's when the real critical mass and those problems happen. But if people are just able to get jobs, look after their families, have some self-actualization, that is when, you know, those people aren't that important anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem in South Africa right now, is there's just such poverty, such unemployment, that we're hoping that these politicians wave these magic wands.
Because they promised to.
Yeah, they promised to. And I mean, that's what Hitler did in Germany, you know, well, solve your problems.
The Jews
and then people listen, you know, and I think that's the danger.
And right, you've got nothing, and you've got nothing to lose. That's an appealing message.
Okay, yeah, but the truth is that life, you know, while it... 1994, we had this amazing, amazing democracy, right, that everybody went and we voted.
Sure.
But for most South Africans, black and white, life has not changed.
Absolutely.
And there is an injustice in that.
Yeah.
And I fully believe that. I really, really do believe that we do need to right the injustices of the past.
Yeah,
by uplifting the community, not by taking away from people.
And I think if you're in a position of privilege, you know, whether it be white privilege, black privilege, Indian privilege, colored privilege, you know, you really have to be very cognizant in South Africa of that privilege and what you do with it. I certainly try to be, at least.
All right. Somebody wants to know, how did King David Lingsfield shape your personality?
It shaped it
entirely. It's time Lorraine Schrager.
she was my history teacher and my favorite teacher.
I put that
on record. I was a very average student, and I got a distinction for history because I had a great teacher in Lorraine Schrager. And whenever I see her, I say, you know, that is the power of a teacher, is it can take an average kid and just transform them. And so back to what King David did for me. I think, you know, our community is tremendously competitive. And when I got to King David, I was at a government school. I started feeling, that competitive nature to try and do well, to try and live to the best of my ability, because, you know, my peers were really trying. Like, you know, not all came from successful families or whatever. I think that's a bit of a, kind of a generalization about, our communities, that, you know, we're all sons and daughters of CEOs. But I did feel this big drive, you know, to try and succeed. And there were kids in, you know, they had the, God, I remember that education system back then. Do you know what that was?
No clue.
The classes were divided into ED.
Oh my gosh, that was OBE. Wasn't it outcomes-based education?
I don't know. Whatever it was, is like the smarter kids were like in the ED classes. And I think as you got tougher, you were like lower down the education. It was a great, now that about it, it was absolutely
child abuse. That's what it is.
Absolutely nuts.
I thought those letters stood for my teacher's name.
No, so I wasn't in the top class. I wasn't in the E or the D or the U. But there was this kind of drive to succeed. And I actually turned it in the arts world to really trying to you know, capture the school's imagination as a singer and as a performer. So I was very known for that. I was the lead in all the plays, and it fostered this confidence in being able to perform, you know, because people would really make a big deal of my performances, you know, the Purim plays and all of this. That was my stomping ground and how I,
Who were you in the Purim plays?
Who was I? I was always like a
Chashvei. No, you weren't God, because God is not mentioned in the Purim story.
Okay, Chashvei Rosh. I was never Mordechai. But yeah, I mean, we did Greece. I was Danny, Zuko in Greece. I did all of those sorts of things, you know. I was very involved in performing arts at King David. And then when I went out, I knew I was either going to be an actor on stage or I was going to be a singer, you know.
How did your parents feel about that after all those King David school fees?
I went to Wits. I went to Wits, then I went to Wits Business School. I got 2 degrees. So I wasn't a singer until I left Investec Bank after I got a job there. Yeah, I was working at Investec.
You see, they bring about a huge crossroads in people's lives.
What, these?
Listen, my parents were incredible. You think about all the money that invested in my education. I got an amazing job, you know, at this wonderful bank after many interviews. And then I left 3 months later and decided to become a musician. And they were probably pretty nuts to allow me to do that, you know, because the prospects of success or making a living were very slim.
No, but you got very special parents.
Who
just support you in everything.
Their force. I actually don't know how they did that. Now, sitting here thinking about it with kids, you know, like, I think they just knew.
What were you thinking, Gavin and Pam?
I just think they knew. You know, it was amazing. I think they just knew that, like, I would make it work somehow. And if I didn't make it work, I would have enough common sense to know when enough was enough and do the sensible thing, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, I had no song on radio. I got a deal from a very small independent label, and I released the song Hurt So Bad, and it just blew up, and then I became like a household name. But for 7 years, I was trying to become an artist, and I went to university and got a job investing because I couldn't get a deal. You know, that was the truth. It was like my backup plan.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Danny Kaye, you remain a very impressive person.
Thank you. Very kind of you. I
told you, Gavin, it's not
Lisa,
kind.
Are you listening?
Okay, Lisa.
She better be listening.
No dishes
my
tonight.
My father-in-law listening.
Yeah, we wanted to actually talk about Billy.
No, it's not fair. Leave him. Let
him
be.
Happy to speak about Billy.
No, he wanted to talk about your prenup.
No, I thought you could be. My prenup?
Yeah.
Have you seen the Encyclopedia Britannica?
I'm going to leave with you.
Have you seen the Encyclopedia Britannica?
What's that?
It makes it look small. I'm married for life, sir.
I'm telling you. Otherwise, on top of that cafe somewhere.
Yeah.
It's a good thing you got a good one.
It's a Billy. I'll end with this. Someone said to me just after I got married. I went on an interview, and you know, everyone always asks me about Billy because he's such a fascinating guy. Check it this: Billy Gandolfinger knew missed call at. That's true, right there. So he might be listening. So Billy said, someone said to me, you know, geez, you married the biggest divorce lawyer in the country's daughter. Like, do you realize that he owns the royalties to the songs you haven't even written yet? And I was like, yeah, that's probably true.
And it's worth it because you just found a gem.
Yeah, listen, he's the most wonderful man, the most wonderful family.
No, I meant Lisa was the gem.
I have to say that he's listening.
Very smart.
But it is a unique situation.
Thank you so much. Don't be a stranger. You are welcome.
Thank you for having me. I listen to the station all the time, and it's great to be here.
Thank you so much.
And meet Sasha, because I'm a big fan.
You see.
Likewise.
Isn't that nice?
Sure. I am.
So, well, we're going to play out with Things We Do. This is Danny Kaye's latest song. How do we get it?
You just put Things We Do into iTunes, Deezer, Spotify, YouTube, SoundCloud, and if none of you understand what I'm saying, just tell your kids to do it for you, okay?
I'll do it for everyone.
Sergio, that's...
There we go.
We'll go to my Instagram or Twitter. It's on there.